Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. This is Janine Ledford, your host and creator of the groundbreaking concepts of intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership. These concepts focus on the integration of creative thinking and cultural development while preparing your leaders for the future of work. So if you're looking for new, exciting ways to build a positive culture of curiosity, inclusion, and belonging that sparks creativity, this is your place. And it's all based on brain science. We have exciting guests on this show in various fields such as neuroscience, education, the arts, and business who highlight how creative thinking thrives in a culture of diverse collaboration. At the Create and Grow podcast, you'll discover how inclusion drives innovation, especially when you have an arts-infused foundation. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Create and Grow podcast. It is your host, Janine Ledford, your intercultural creativity, neurosomatic creativity, and prismatic leadership keynote speaker. I am excited to be here today with our amazing guest, Peter Kahn, who is a poet and educator that changes lives and transforms classrooms. He was a spoken word educator in 2003 at Oak Park and River Forest High School until his retirement in June of 22. And now he leads poetry programming in Columbus, Ohio. And he's been featured in many publications, including Louder Than a Bomb and America to Me, as well as on a PBS NewsHour and Chicago special. He was on NPR Morning Edition and BBC Radio as well. I can go on and on. He's done amazing things in the world of poetry. And I'm excited even to have him be a mentor and a possible teacher and voice within our own company of Cafe Strategies, because we're big on the arts. But just his expertise, his credibility, and his vulnerability in this field, working with himself, with corporate, but especially with kids, is unmatched, unprecedented. And we are so happy to have him on the Create and Grow podcast. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. So what does poetry mean to you?
So to me, it's a vehicle to engage young people in particular and give them a sense of voice and help them figure out their way through this world. I write some on my own as well. I had a book out, but I do that more to be a role model than anything else. I'm an educator first, and I happened upon poetry as kind of the secret sauce after it had been my enemy for a long time. And that was about 1998, and it transformed the arc of my career and hopefully has transformed the lives of many young people.
Wow. You said you stumbled upon it and it transformed your life. As a man in education and where you were, how does poetry transform your life? And then how did you present it so it can transform the lives of those who you serve?
So it transformed my life as an educator more than as an individual, though it has impacted my life as an individual. But I brought in a former student. I was terrible at teaching poetry, and I knew it. It was my least favorite unit to teach when I was a traditional English teacher. So I brought in a former student, Jonathan Vaughn, who I knew liked poetry. And I said, Jonathan, you got to help me out here. Can you come in and teach for a day? So he came in and kids enjoyed it. And he mentioned the idea of a poetry slam. And after he left, my student said, can we try that? And I'd been to poetry slams. And I said, of course, let's give it a try. And the kid with the lowest grade in either of my sophomore English classes ended up winning the poetry slam. And you just saw how it transformed, how everybody looked at him, and how, more importantly, how he looked at himself. And the light bulb went on at that point. It's like, wow, I got to investigate this further and see what I can do with it. And eventually, by 2000, 2001, that was the focus of my career, was teaching poetry and getting young people to write it and to share it and to craft it.
That's powerful. There's so much there because we're in a shift. We're in a shift in education. I believe we're in a shift in the corporate world. We're in the shift because of AI. So many things are influencing this shift right now. And for you to have that experience to watch someone who traditionally was not excelling at the traditional cutter ways of going through school, right? Mm-hmm. But now he had this outside experience, you know, or this other experience that wasn't a part of the traditional full school year, and he just excelled. And what does that speak to you about students who don't have the access to poetry or the other arts?
Well, I've been working as a career to make sure students do get that exposure, mm-hmm. and do have those opportunities. So recently I moved to Columbus, Ohio, here, home of the Buckeyes, to be close to my parents and sister and nephew. But I got to work in four local schools this past year. And I'm going to be working in eight schools this upcoming school year, trying to integrate this poetry programming into the classroom and to get schools to see how important it is mm-hmm. to embrace it and to utilize it so that students do feel like they have a voice.
And that's huge. And I want to definitely support you in advocating that and giving it the credibility that it deserves. I have a brain in my hand for those of you who are listening to the podcast, and we're big on the neuroscience of life, basically, right? And the author Susan Magsman and Ivy Ross came out with a very timely book that I believe will move our work and the work that you do more into the forefront of not just K-12 training, but also corporate training. Because what we're looking at is what's going on in the brain. And I want to read a segment from the book. And Holly, do you have one of your poems available, like with you now?
I can find one.
Okay. Or if you have one memorized, because we definitely can't end the show without you sharing one of your poems, right? So this is Your Brain on Art. It's a great book, How the Arts Transform Us. And what your work does and my work does is to prove to America that the arts should be an integral part of everyone's life, right? And poetry life. And what they said was, on page 54, reading poetry, in fact, lights up some of the same parts of the brain as listening to music. It provides a familiar rhythm that taps into something more ancient in us. Though, even though poetry is words, it reaches beyond language. By providing quantitative data from physiology, neuroimaging, and behavior, our studies converge in showing that poetry is a powerful emotional stimulus capable of engaging brain areas of primary reward. And so they just go on to talk about how poetry is a safe way to engage with difficult emotions. I would love for you to expand upon that concept.
So, you know, ultimately, as an educator, if you're a good educator, you're going to get to know your students, right? And tapping into where they are emotionally is an important part of that. And what I've found is that poetry, through that creativity, allows them to tap into that and to share it out in ways that just having a conversation, it doesn't come out. Writing an essay, it doesn't come out. But somehow poetry and the creativity that goes along with it allows us to access our emotions, particularly young people. And when it's shared publicly, it allows us to find empathy and find other people that are experiencing the same things that we are.
Yeah, that's huge. And when I look at where the training is going from the corporate viewpoint and also the K-12, that emotional regulation, that emotional granularity, right? Emotional intelligence, empathy, which we're learning is neurologically affected by who you see as part of your in-group and who you see as part of your out-group, right? Mm-hmm. It affects your ability to empathize and the power of storytelling. But the storytelling within poetry is huge. I love the brain. So I'm going to read a few more things, and I would love your take on this. And so there's something in our brain called the default mode network. And basically, when we're not focused on a task and focused on the outside world, we're kind of in daydreaming and within ourselves and talking to ourselves and asking ourselves questions. They say that your default mode network is on. And they're combining that network with creativity, right? With innovative thoughts, with also introspection. Right. And something called interoceptive abilities, just your ability to connect with your body and but also to think with yourself and really just wonder about things. Right. And what they said was, when we can close a book or turn off the recording of a poet or walk away from a poetry reading, we can use it when and how we need it. Rhyme and rhythm have been shown to intensify emotions at the neurochemical level, as poetry activates brain areas such as the posterior cingulate cortex and the medial temporal lobes, which have been linked to the default mode network that I just mentioned, and introspection. The training in corporate, I don't know what school training is doing, but the training in corporate right now in this environment is all about the inner developing process of a leader and introspection and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. How can our top leaders in the business world use poetry to build that skill?
Well, when I think about the corporate world, it's about team building and building that empathy. So when I lead workshops with adults, one of the things I like to do is get them writing about experiences they had. So let's say we're doing a leadership training. Think about a moment in time when you first realized that you were a good leader, or think about a moment in time when you wish you had been a better leader, right? And by digging into that stuff and then writing about it and then sharing out, it's a way of tapping into that introspection, but also then being able to share that out, building that empathy with others and hearing their stories as well. So to me, that's a way of utilizing poetry to get to that introspection. And again, team building, and a good leader is going to at times make themselves vulnerable and share of themselves, right? But also be a good listener. And poetry, particularly spoken word poetry, where it's read aloud, allows that opportunity.
To go off of this, once again, I love this book because I feel that you and I and other people who are know the value of the arts and the value of its presence in our lives from birth to the grave, right? People haven't been taking us seriously in the past. Mm-hmm. And I feel that now that we have all this neuroscience research of what the arts actually do to the brain, that people will actually start taking us seriously and bringing us in and taking us seriously as sales training or, you know, team building or all the other trainings and professional developments that teachers have to go through. I would love to do like a trauma and poetry, like, you know, how do you help kids go through the traumatic experience of transition or whatever trauma that they've been through or just coming to school, right? What does that look like? That's huge. So what are your thoughts about what Dr. Magnuson and Dr. Ivy Ross say about this? Writing or reading, poetry also helps the brain to create new narratives and to stop replaying the same worrying thought patterns over and over again, which activates neuroplasticity processes in the brain. Poetry and other forms of narrative have been shown to make us more self-reflective. And also, well, I guess I'll talk about that next. But what are your thoughts about that? Creating narratives. A lot of times people get stuck in their lives because of the narratives that they're playing over and over again. How have you seen poetry help your students overcome that?
Well, I have one former student named Van, for instance. And when they would come into the office, the spoken word office, and be angry or upset about something, I would give them a pen and a piece of lined paper. And, you know, over time, I didn't have to say anything. But initially, it is, look, you're ruminating on this. So maybe they went on a rant, right? That they're upset with their father, for instance. They were ruminating about it, and basically going around in circles. But the act of writing it down kind of relieves the brain of, you know, you don't have to worry about solving this right now. It's there. You can come back to it, right? And then in the telling of it and the creativity around it and using metaphorical language as you're crafting it into a poem, it's allowing you to, again, reshape that narrative a little bit, where you're putting your own spin on things and you can inject humor, for instance, or a very odd metaphor as you're describing something that can take some of the bite out of that narrative. I also try to, when I work with my slam team, my poetry slam team, we would do a gratitude journal and try to think about, you know, you may have had a lousy day and you'll get to write about that in a bit, but let's think about things that have gone well. And it might just be you didn't trip and fall down the stairs, right? You've had a horrible day, but that didn't happen, right? And you get to be sitting here with us and you're about to write a poem. That's something to be thankful for, right? So those are ways of trying to counter the narrative, I'm having a terrible day. All right, you may have had a terrible day and you'll get to vent about that. But what are some things that actually did go well?
Ah, I love that. I love that. Almost like the shifting of attention, right? The brain grows in areas that it gives attention to, right? Attention is prime real estate for us. That's why there's companies paying billions of dollars for our attention, right?
True.
And a few things you said there that I really want our audience to connect with, that emotions is energy in motion. Have you heard that before?
I think I have. I like
yeah.
it. I like
the, it. The etymology of the term, or not necessarily the etymology, but what the term means. Emotion is just basically energy in motion. And we are emotional beings, but there's energy going through me right now in my brain, electrical and energy. And we have to understand it's almost like a flow, right? And that's why meditation is so important. But if something happens where we just get tightened with energy and we are not able to release it in any way, whether it's, you know, going for running or doing the arts, dancing, singing, or talking it out, and now journaling and poetry, mm-hmm. it just gets stuck in us, which could metastasize into, you know, a type of sickness or stress or cancers or anything like that. And so allowing people to see poetry as a way to move the energy through you. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I mean, another way I've looked at it over the years, I read an article in the New Yorker maybe 12, 14 years ago called The Poverty Clinic, and they referenced adverse childhood experience, right? Mm-hmm. So ACE scores. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought about and read about expressive writing, it's we all have background noise, right? So it might be that you have new contact lenses and they're messing with your eyes. It might be your five-year-old son told you that he was being bullied, right? So things that we're carrying around that are in the back of our head. Now, for some young people in particular, that's clouding everything, right? Or maybe they're scared about something and they're not going to be able to learn like that. So we need ways of lowering that background noise and getting the cortisol production not to be overflowing, right? That's the issue with the high ACE scores mm-hmm. and the negative impact it has both mentally and physically, right? So what I found is poetry, writing poetry, and then sharing that poetry is a way of lowering that background noise. So that we can function. Some of us can do it more naturally than others, but this is one of those outlets so that you can lower that background noise, put it over here so that you can function in your jobs, so you can function in your, you know, as a student. Mm-hmm. So I think that goes along with what you're saying as well.
Yeah. We need more tools, especially in this climate where mental health, the importance of mental health is coming up more and more because there's so many issues with that, especially with our youth. Of giving them more tools to process. Of course, protecting them, that's the first and foremost, prevention, right? Mm-hmm. But also giving them prevention and intervention tools as well. Another aspect I would love your thoughts on is, as I talk about creativity, and I talk about it in the realms of, it's not only artistry, you know, you can be creative in all areas. My mechanic is very creative with my old car that he used to keep running for like 20 years. But creativity is found in all fields. And so many different ways. And there is artistic creativity as well. And my research is showing that artistic creativity also helps you function and see things in non-artistic creative pursuits, right? So if you're an accountant or you're an entrepreneur, you know, or you're whatever you're doing, a background in the arts just helps your brain be more interconnected. And just see things and observe things in a different way. There's one of my gems called perspective shifting. And in episode 66 of my podcast, I sit down with Dr. Michael Platt, who is the director of the Wharton Neuroscience Initiative over there in Pennsylvania or Philadelphia, I believe, somewhere over there. And he talks about leaders have to have a perspective shifting capabilities to be able to shift perspective around an issue, like creatively, but mm-hmm. also to shift perspective with people socially, right? And this intercultural connection of shifting perspective. How does poetry really develop that muscle of shifting perspective in someone's environment or in someone's relationship?
Well, as a writer, you can just write something straight. Right. But if you start adding metaphorical language to it, you're expanding how you're looking at something. And good poets are very observant. good leaders are very observant. And then again, once you put it out in the world, particularly if you're reading a poem so others can hear it, then you're looking out at the audience and you're seeing reactions. And people are coming up to you afterwards and you're having conversations around that. So that would be my initial thought. I don't know if I properly answered the question on that one.
Yes. Well, when we talk about creativity, that's one of the aspects I say that we should be working on this area. To me, creativity is, you know, your imagination, your ability to make associations, especially unusual associations, and see how things could be connected. But I say metaphorical thinking. That's on my list. Because if you look at Da Vinci and all the great thought leaders and the great speakers, you know, like MLK and just the great speakers of our time, Margaret Thatcher, a lot of their speeches have this metaphorical language, this through line, right? And what metaphors do, there's a great TED Talk by, I don't know who it's by John, I'll have to look it up later, but it's just the power of the analogy, the power of the metaphor. And that's what I communicate to business leaders is just, you know, have you been practicing using your metaphor? You have a team, you need to lead these people to trust you and to go behind the mission of the company. But what are your tools that are helping you do that? Storytelling and metaphor are one of them. And you can practice that through your poetry practice, correct?
In something I teach with metaphors, we talk about having a stretch bridge metaphor, right? So a footbridge metaphor is a cliche. So the moon is a golf ball. That's not much of a stretch. It is a metaphor, right? It's a comparison of two unlike things without using like or as. But if you say the moon is a golf ball lodged in the sky's black sand trap, right? The moon is a golf ball lodged in the sky's black sand trap. Suddenly you've stretched the bridge. Right. It's much more creative. It's much more original. Now, you don't want a broken bridge metaphor where it makes no sense whatsoever. The moon is a pen running out of ink. Okay. That's original, but it doesn't make sense. There's nothing in common there. Right. So I think if you're a leader, you have to be a visionary. Number one, so you have to think beyond the obvious. And number two, you have to be a good listener. And if someone gives you an idea that's a good one, you want to be able to stretch it so it's a better idea, right? Yes. So I think that's where there's that commonality between metaphorical thinking and poetry and metaphorical thinking in the workplace.
Yeah, it's so strong. I believe people are not aware of it, how strong it is right now. But with your work, with my work, and with the mission and with the neuroscience behind it, I believe 1 year, 3 years, maybe definitely by five, that it'll be almost mandatory training, right? You want to be a leader, right? You have to go through the intercultural creativity and prismatic leadership training, which includes a significant point of poetry training. And a big part of leadership right now is that self-awareness, self-reflection. And we talked a little bit about it, but how does poetry, and I'm writing my book of poetry for next year. I want to publish it next year. And I traveled through Japan and Korea and just took pictures of flowers. And so my book will have the flowers of Japan and some other photos from those regions. And then my personal haikus and seijos, which are poetry from Korean, and then some free verse type of poetry as well. And my son will contribute one so I can put his name on the book because we share a co-authorship a lot because I want him to know being an author is like normal. It's not an exception. It's the norm in our family. But I had to sit down and really think. Like there's a picture of a flower. It's a beautiful purple flower and it just rained in Japan. And I took a picture of it. The title Purple Rain came up. Of course, you know, when you think of Purple Rain, you think of who?
Prince.
You think of Prince, and purple's the combination between red and blue. And we have this such division between red and blue in our nation, right? What that symbolizes. Yeah. But I feel that he was talking about purple. Like, can we unify? Can we have unity? What does Purple Rain look like? So I was going to take that concept and write a poem about it, but reference him, you know, slightly, or people will know kind of like what
the use a lyric here and there.
Yes. Yes. Because a lot of people don't know that Prince was just a huge advocate for just he would give money just to students in low wealth areas and very privately. He didn't want anyone to know that he was doing it and just wanted people to unify and just to really support the creative gifts that our youth had. And this poetry book that I'm looking to write, I'm like, wow, you really need to go inside. That's the thing. You need to go inside. How do you help students, whether they be men and women running multi-million dollar companies or students, you know, who are in your high schools and some of them are on free and reduced lunch and everyone in between, how do you help them go inside? Because it's hard for some of these initiators.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the best poetry is both personal and universal. Mm. So as you're talking about this poem that you're going to craft, you had what I liked is you looked in and you looked out. So there is a vulnerability to that if you are going to do the personal, but if you can connect it to the wider world, that's when you're able to put yourself out there, but you're able to get people to see themselves in your poem and hopefully inspire them to write their own. But just the symbolism, like you were talking about as well, that if you're just writing a newspaper article about that flower, that symbolism isn't going to be there. As you're thinking about crafting a poem, your mind starts thinking about those things and making those kind of connections. So I think it's a beautiful tool to get people to try to utilize is writing a poem and being observant and thinking about what that flower makes them think about from their lives and the wider world.
That is so good. Having people go out and in, like, what does that look like? We have a research from Dr. Gabriella Starr out of the University of Pomona or Pomona College in California. And she has a wonderful lecture. It is long and it is thick, you know, so be aware, those of you who don't like thick academic stuff. It took me a few like watches to really see what she was saying. But she said that aesthetics, because there's something called neural aesthetics now of, okay, well, what's going on in the brain when we're really engaging in visual art or music or in dance or in poetry or in theater? Like, why is this important on the neurological level? Mm-hmm. And she was saying that this engagement of the art is laced over the network of the default mode network that we mentioned before, this your ability to go within and think to yourself and wander and have your thoughts on your subconscious kind of do their little dance and link up. And they're looking at that, how aesthetics really kind of overlaps this default mode network. So yeah, you're going out like to take this picture of this flower, but then now I have to go in just really think about what does this flower mean to me symbolically? Mm-hmm. Like this flower has nothing to do with Prince and his ability to speaking about with that song or that message. But how does my brain make those connections? And then the end point is, okay, well, what does it really mean to me and my life in this time that I'm living mm-hmm. living with that? So let's look
at hope it'll make people to think about their own lives.
Yes. Right? Yes. And that's good. So with your work, what's some of your best work that you don't mind sharing?
So I'm at my parents' house. I don't have my book in front of me.
So sorry.
Earlier when you were talking, and that's why I probably didn't answer that first question as well. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find a recent poem. I would not say this is my best work. One of the things I did want to say about poetry is one of my friends and mentors is a poet named Avan Jordan, who's at Stanford at the moment, a professor at Stanford. And when he worked with my students, one of the things that really resonated, he said, your first draft is not a poem. Poem is in the revision process. Mm-hmm. And in my book, I would say the average number of drafts for a poem to make it into my collection was probably 6 to 10, right? So it's in the revising, in the revision. So I'm going to go against that in a way, and I'm going to read a poem that I wrote in April, and I haven't really done much revising for it, but it's kind of relevant to our talk. So my nephew, one of the reasons I moved back here, he's 12 years old, and he's a really smart, clever kid, and he's a good reader, but he doesn't enjoy reading. Right. He'd rather be on TikTok. He'd rather be playing sports or watching TV than reading. And we got him a book by the author Nick Stone, who's probably most famous for writing Dear Martin. This is a book called The Clean Getaway. And initially we were reading every other page out loud and reading together. And he said, you know, when I'm reading aloud, it's not registering. I need to be reading along and listening. So what we would do is I would read, and every once in a while I'd stop and he'd just have to say the next word. So I knew that he was following along, right? Mm-hmm. So in any case, this was right between my parents' birthdays. I wrote this poem called An Ode to Books. And my nephew's name is Griffin. Griffin loves to read. Griffin hates reading. Books adore Griffin. Why does Griffin hate to love what adores him? The book flaps its pages like a bald eagle taking off or landing. Its pages wave over Griffin. Come look at us. We have more power than scrolling. We can hug you with the letters of our sentences. We can sentence you to letters of hugs, to landings of flapping letters. We can help you take off. So that's my recent little poem. Try to get Griffin to enjoy reading more than just seeing it as a task.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I love it. And I have your book. Thank you very much. And I believe for me, I love writing our inner child books. We don't call them children books. We call them inner child books because some of these books even help adults. Right? Mm-hmm. Right. And let's see. Our new book that I'll be talking about towards the end, everything is in poem form, just, and I personally love it because I believe the brain just hooks on onto it more than that. But the beginning is called My Brain, My Brain, My Beautiful Brain. It's just released last month. And it says, My brain, my brain, my beautiful brain, ideas flow through it like rivers of rain. My brain is a wonder, helps me do all I do as I live and create. And the same goes for you. My brain has six sections combining like art to allow me to function. I'll show you. Let's start. And then it just goes through the brain lobes. And then it goes into the eight multiple intelligences by Gardner. Mm-hmm. And it says, my brain, my brain, my beautiful brain, my marvelous brain. I'm sorry. It allows me to soar like a beautiful crane. Knowing how its part works helps me understand why. My brain keeps me growing past the limits of the sky. All its parts work together, helping me to be smart in eight ways we know of. I'll show you. Let's start. And
that must have been fun to write.
Yes, yes. And that's another thing. I'll read this last page. Every day I can thank it for all that I do and for helping connect me to new friends like you. And it's our family, our family standing together, and Sean. Uh-huh. And so Sean really gives me the content and I try to put it in poetry form. And then I do work with a poetry editor because there's this thing called rhythm and time and tempo and meter. Yes. That some of my things don't match up. She's like, yeah, we got to fix this over here. So she helps me clean it up. Her name is Meg Pincus, and she is an amazing children's book author and poet editor herself. And so what would you advise adults to do? Because there'll be a lot of adults with this in their own lives. Mm-hmm. And if they have young dependents, as far as how can they slowly reintroduce this? Because we've all had it because it's a state standard, right? But how can they reintroduce this in their lives when it's not mandatory? It's voluntary, but it's necessary. Ooh, that rhymes.
Well, reading poetry and good poetry is a starting point, right? So there are a lot of amazing contemporary poets in the world. So Terence Hayes, Patricia Smith, Sharon Olds, Yusuf Komunyakaa, Nate Marshall, Jose Olivares, Hanif Abdurraqib, Franny Choi. These are just a few names that come to me. So go to the library, go to the bookstore, read books. But also there's both the Academy of American Poets and the Poetry Foundation have something called Poem a Day, mm-hmm. where you can sign up for a newsletter where you get a new poem in your inbox each day, right? Oh, cool. So it will be two a day if you subscribe to both. So I just had a Spoken Word Club alumni session. So I live in Ohio now, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't see my alumni like I used to. So we had about 45 alumni show up to this thing. It was beautiful. And what we did, and this is what I would suggest people do, so we looked at two poems from Terence Hayes' new book. We looks for striking lines, right? So parts, lines that jump out as being particularly thought-provoking, original, interesting, discuss the poem, and then came up with writing prompts inspired by the poem, right? Mm-hmm. So what does it make you think about that you could write about? So write about a time when that leads to the narrative of things, right? So it's not a nebulous poem. It's going to focus on a narrative, on a story, something that happened, what we call a specific incident, a one-time when. Mm-hmm. So I would suggest getting a book, let's say by Terence Hayes, reading the poems, and as you're reading, noting what he's doing that you appreciate, and then writing down some potential writing prompts. And then by the time you finished his book, you probably have 15 writing prompts. And then you go back and it's like, okay, which of these do I want to write about today? And you spend the next 10 days choosing out of those 15 prompts and you write a draft a day. And then, as what A. Van Jordan said, that doesn't mean you've written 10 poems, you've written 10 drafts. Now let's make them into poems. Let's look through them. What's cliche? What is confusing? Where could I add in a metaphor or simile? Where can I condense, make it a little bit more concise, right? Where's a word choice I could change that would be more precise and original, et cetera, et cetera. So that would be my recommended process to get started with.
And you can do this within your family, right? You can do this within yourself. This is a great team activity. Yep. Once again, as the leadership research goes more towards leaders who are self-reflective, who are, have high self-awareness, who have good communication skills, inspirational mm-hmm. skills, all of this lines up, right?
Oh, certainly.
All of this lines up. Wonderful. Well, I know that it is late where you are because we're about three hours behind you. So you are about to go enjoy your festivities with your family. Mm-hmm. Before I end, I wanted to, there's two things that I wanted to do during the end, but I want to first end with another quote from Your Brain on Art, because we're trying to prove to people that poetry is good for your brain. It really is like a workout for your brain to keep it more creative, more observant, self-reflective, and introspective. Mm-hmm. And what Krista Tippett did, she's the host of a popular podcast called On Being. She said that she often invites poets as guests onto her show precisely because the right words make a profound difference in our relationship to the world. When we're dealing with emotional upheaval, she says, things that have to be moved through us in order for our lives to move forward. There's that connection of energy moving through you, right? Mm-hmm. We see the importance of poetry in taking us toward healing. And I know you probably agree with that. Sure. It is about sensory experience and how we calm ourselves and tether ourselves. How do we stay resilient? That's a big word in the training world right now. How do we ground ourselves again and again? Poetry plants us in our bodies, she claims. It plants us as much in what has been experienced as in our thoughts. That's how we become whole. Any last thoughts about Krista Tippett's words?
Well, as we go introspective and we see where those cracks occur in ourselves by writing them and crafting poetry and sharing poetry, it is a way of healing some of those cracks so that we do become more whole, as she says.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And so you shared a poem. I just want to end with this short one. I was like, let me read some more, right? But I was at UCLA and mm-hmm. I was a sophomore or junior, and I would ride the big blue bus down to Venice Beach, right? And just go do work and watch the people play basketball and play dominoes and such. And I remember being on the big blue bus in Santa Monica, and I looked up, and apparently Santa Monica bus system had this poetry campaign where they would put poems mm-hmm. on their buses every now and then. Yep. And right, this is UCLA. So this is what, year 2000. So this has been over like 20 years ago, 23 years ago. And it stuck with me. Do you feel that poetry sticks to you?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, in my friends who are from the Caribbean, part of schooling was memorizing and reciting poems, right? And some of my friends can recite a poem that they memorized when they're 15 years old, and they're now in their 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. So I do think And as you said, with rhyme and rhythm, it makes it easier to memorize. So it's easier to recall, you know? So I would fully agree. And I'm looking through On Being, because I know some of my friends have been on there. So,
oh, cool. Great.
One of my co-editors, Hanif Abdurraqib, was on there, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does an amazing job.
Wonderful. So if you have any links to share from On Being that you want our audience to know about, please send those. So I will end with the poem that stuck with me for over 20 years from a Santa Monica Big Blue Bus. And okay. Then we'll end with your gem, right? We're the diamonds here. That's our logo of our company. And we believe everyone should shine bright. And in this episode, we believe everyone should shine bright through the method of poetry. But what I looked up while on the bus to Venice, a poem by Pablo Neruda from his book, 100 Love Sonnets. I'm assuming you've heard of him, right? I had no idea who he was. But he wrote, "I love you without knowing how or when or from where. I love you straightforwardly without complexities or pride. I love you because I know no other way than this, where I does not exist, nor you. So close that your hand upon my chest is my hand, so close that your eyes close as I fall asleep." And I beautiful, scribbled it down and I kept it with me. And I love it. And I love poetry and I love the work that you're doing with youth. And I hope that we can do some work with adults, because I think adults need this just as much as anyone. Human beings need this. And hopefully with this work in the brain, and the people will see the seriousness of the work for our lived experience, and we'll get this to every corner of the earth. So what's your last gem before we head on out?
I'm going to go with embrace creativity or let the computers take over. I was just thinking, like, I know we're going to have to embrace AI, and some people are already embracing it. But we have to be more creative or we're going to become obsolete.
And poetry is one of the ways to do that. Thank you so much. If people wanted to find more out about you and your work, where should they go?
So they can go to my website, which is poet-educatorpeterkahn, all one word, .org. So poet-educatorpeterkahn, KAHN.org. And there's a submit form there if someone wants to send me a message.
Wonderful, wonderful. So you can find Peter there. If you need personal poetry coaching, I bet you he will assist you with that as well. Executive coaching for this introspective journey that a lot of our senior leaders are on, because it's a huge, big part of their creative thinking and their imaginative and innovative thinking. And poetry is a great way to get you there. So thank you so much, Peter Kahn. Thank you for your contribution. And we're just looking forward to getting you and your work out there and you being my mentor in this space. As I, AABB, wait, what's going on here? You know, as I dive back into this world and try to bring this work to corporate America and, of course, back to our K-12 school systems all around the nation. I thank God that I just have access to great minds who know how to do it well. So thank you so much for your time. And thank you, my amazing audience. Thank you for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us at the Create and Grow podcast. We hope that you obtain some amazing gems and are able to learn the various ways you are creative and how we can be more creative when we work together. If you wish to learn more about our organizational training programs and professional development for companies, organizations, schools, and districts, visit cafestrategies.com. That's C-A-F-F-E strategies.com. This is where we have amazing keynote speakers and certified facilitators on board to help your organization learn how to develop leaders with the unique Prismatic Leadership Method. We also have groundbreaking book titles in our online bookstore that lay out the 7 gems of intercultural creativity, as well as our inner child books that inspire the innate creative ability of our little ones and you too. Our team thanks you once again for joining us on the Create and Grow podcast. And remember to shine bright like a diamond. See you next time.